Hi, and welcome to the Everyone Funding Startups podcast. This week, I'm your host, Paul Higgins, and I'm joined by Sarah Hanks, the CEO of CrowdCheck, the crowdfunding due diligence company. Sarah's been doing due diligence on companies wanting to raise money for almost three decades now, and also spoke as part of the panel at the SEC's recent forum on small business capital formation, talking about the Jobs Act and the Crowdfunding Act, Title III in particular. Sarah, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Do you want to start by kind of talking us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with working with the SEC?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a very traditional securities law background. Way back when, in the late 80s, early 90s, I worked at the SEC. And from there, I went to one of the largest law firms in the world. And I was a partner there for, I was there for 19 years, partner for 16 years. Then I was doing a lot of IPOs, traditional style, you know, very big IPOs, billion-dollar things on the New York Stock Exchange and the like. And then in the crisis, capital markets slowed down. I was getting a little bored. Came across an old SEC friend who said that Elizabeth Warren's panel on the on Capitol Hill, looking into the TARP program, was looking for somebody who knew about the New York Stock Exchange and how the capital markets worked. And I said, you know what? I know that. And 2 days later, I had a new job. The panel stood down more than a year ago now. I started thinking about what I was going to do next. Started to get interested in crowdfunding, and there was so many interesting legal questions there, and working with the SEC and all of the various trade organizations in the industry, I just got very, very interested in how we would address one of the things that people thought was a major issue in crowdfunding, which is how do you prevent fraud?
Right, and of course that led you to found CrowdCheck. Talk to us about that company.
That's right. I mean, everybody was focused on the fraud issue, and because we're talking about very, very small offerings here, the sort of offerings where the SEC isn't going to be able to do to dedicate a lot of its resources, and where the discipline of securities plaintiffs' lawyers is probably not going to enter into very much. People were worried that there was going to be nobody looking out for the small investor. And so me and my co-founders started thinking, you know what, there's a private market solution to that. If we could found a company that would establish that somebody seeking crowdfunding was indeed who he or she said he was, that they were doing what they say they were doing, we could give them a good housekeeping seal of approval saying, we're not saying whether this is a good investment or not, but we can say that these guys aren't frauds. And that's the way CrowdCheck started.
And so you offer a couple of different levels of kind of background checks, right?
That's right. They're more than background checks. We've got four different levels, only three of which would work for Title II type accredited online raises. But at the very basic level, our most basic check lets the company prove to the world that it has complied with all the statutory and regulatory requirements. And then going on from there, we have different levels of check that go into more deeply into a company's operations. But it's more than just a background check. It includes background checks, but it's a complete disclosure and due diligence package. A company that works with us will know that it meets all of the requirements of the SEC and the statute with respect to disclosure and background checks, and that it presents a report that shows that it's legitimate so that investors can make an informed investment decision.
So we're coming to the end of 2012 now. Could you sort of summarise for our listeners the what the current state of the Jobs Act regulation is, particularly around crowdfunding?
Where we are at the moment is, as probably all of our listeners know, the statute said the SEC has to have crowdfunding regulations in place by the end of the year. The problem is, of course, that there is no sanction if the SEC doesn't do it. And the SEC is way behind on a number of different rules still from the Dodd-Frank Act from 2010 and is under-resourced in many respects. They have a lot of things on their plate, and they have a lot of priorities ahead of the Jobs Act. I think one of the things that we have to bear in mind is, even though all of us in crowdfunding world think that getting Title III of the Jobs Act into effect is the most important thing in the world, the SEC has a few systemic issues that it has to address, including, for example, money market reform. We all remember the panic when one of the money market funds broke the buck back in 2008. And the rules to prevent that happening again have not yet been put in place. And that's got to go ahead of crowdfunding. So they've got a lot of work ahead of them, but they are working hard. And they've made a lot of progress on crowdfunding so far. I think that we will definitely, I'll put money on it, we will see Title III crowdfunding in 2013. It's just not going to be in the first two quarters.
And of course, we've seen recently a couple of changes at the top of the SEC. We've seen Chairman Shapiro leave as expected, and also Meredith Cross leaving at the end of the year. Is that going to have an impact, do you think, on these timelines?
Probably not. I mean, one of the things about Meredith, who of course was Division Director in Corporation Finance, she was recused from working on crowdfunding in any case. So even though she's a very important part of the overall process of Jobs Act reform, there is no substantive knowledge that, despite her, she's a fantastic lawyer, but there isn't a substantive problem there. We're not losing someone who was intricately involved in these rules because she was recused from them. Lona Nalangara, who was her deputy working on this, has taken the place of acting division director. So you have good continuity there. And then, of course, at the very top, Elise Walter has taken over from Mary Shapiro. And, of course, she knows everything Mary does. And one thing I keep reminding people is it's a five-person commission, means you only need three votes. And there are four commissioners there. So I don't think those changes, obviously the new chairman will have to establish her own priorities, but I don't think the fact that there's been changes will be a hugely delaying factor in adoption of Title II or Title III.
Okay. So and on Title II, which is really around the lift on the ban on general solicitation for private offerings, that we've also seen a few delays there. What do you think the SEC is really wrestling with? What are the key issues they're trying to work through there at the moment?
On the Title III?
Title II.
Well, I mean, Title II is pretty much done. I mean, at the time Title II came out, one of the things that I, as a constant apologist for the SEC, I have a great fondness for my old agency, I said, oh, there's all these extra things that they have to address. It's not just that they make a couple of changes and cross out a few words and a couple of rules, but there's a lot of collateral issues that have to be addressed. And then I was a little disappointed when I saw the actual proposal that didn't address any of those. So that's the SEC's homework for the future. But what happened with Title II, we were all anticipating that it might be an immediately effective rule or a transitional provisional rule that people could rely on now to do Title II offerings, offerings on the internet to accredited investors. And what we got instead was a proposed rule with a comment period, which is now ended. I would not be surprised if we didn't see any changes to the rule as proposed. A lot of people have speculated as to all of the bad things that are going to happen to Title II because of the change at the top. But I think what we have to remember is the vote at the commission for the proposed Title II was 4-1. Three of those four votes are still there. And so the implication would be, what more do they need to change? They don't really need to change anything to be comfortable with adopting it as it is. Timing might be interesting. Everyone has been assuming that Title II would come ahead of Title III. It's possible that political issues might change that calculation. And all I can say is every time I've tried to make a prediction, I've got it absolutely wrong. So don't ask me.
And I mean, what kind of what do you think people will notice? You know, I'm not particularly talking about us in the crowdfunding industry, but you know, the kind of everyday Americans. What will they notice when these regulations come into effect?
It's going to be very interesting because I don't know. I'm sure all of our listeners, we all talk to each other about crowdfunding all the time, but then when we go to cocktail parties full of normal people. Or even Wall Street type people, and they ask, what are you doing? And we say, well, we're doing crowdfunding. People don't have the faintest idea what this is. So I think there's going to be a couple of different phases. First, there will be a blitz of information where people will learn about crowdfunding, get super excited, possibly get a little overexcited about what it will do. And I think we'll see, I don't want to use the word bubble because that implies mispricing, but we'll see a huge expansion of interest in crowdfunding. And then when people realize it's not magic, it's not like somebody waved a magic wand and suddenly millions of jobs fell out of the sky and millions of companies were able to fund themselves, then we'll see a more rational, steady state where we see that this is a very useful tool for small companies that are looking to raise funds, haven't been able to find it in the traditional funding venues like banks and VCs. And what we'll see is more companies raising money in the early stages through crowdfunding, more of those companies being minority and women run, and an overall expansion of it's not magic, but it's going to be a very good influence.
And why do you think the minorities and women-led companies will show up more there?
I think it's because if you're not grown up in the traditional funding model, if you're not used to traditional banking, we see a lot of, and I speak for people I know, a lot of women who think they have a pretty good idea, but they've never done this. They've never dealt with banks before, outside of just having their own personal accounts. And they're a little bit afraid of being judged, being found wanting, and having the ability to prove their concept among their friends and their families and their internet friends before they ever have to go to the conventional funding sources, that's going to help ease them into this market.
Very interesting. And then looking slightly further ahead then, kind of 5, 10 or 15 years ahead, what do you imagine the impact of these regulations will be?
I think that it will have been a major sea change, both on the part of investors and entrepreneurs. Like I say, it's not magic, but it's very important. And rather than have the traditional model of, you max out your credit card to start your business, and then you go to your family and friends, and then you try and find angel financing, and if you fail, then you just don't go any further. Crowdfunding will just have an absolutely normal standard part in that whole progression of corporate fundraising. On the side of investors, everybody is going to have their own little crowdfunding portfolio. Huge numbers of people will have small amounts of money as just part of their overall investment portfolio.
And what about the impact on other kind of traditional support industries like law firms and like accountants and consulting groups or valuation companies? And how will this new way and method of raising money have an impact on those groups?
Well, I think that the way that traditional support industries are going to be affected is they're going to need to respond to the fact that small companies are going to be involved in a level of regulatory complexity much earlier in the company's life than they would otherwise have to. They're going to have to address things like, are we going to start off with two classes of securities, for example, with one class of crowdfunding and one class of the founders? How are we going to deal with our new crowd? How do we communicate with them? How do they communicate with us? Because we're talking about very small companies who have a company to run as well as talking to their 500, 1,000 investors. There is issues like there are going to be accounting issues and tax issues with respect to some of the new innovations that people are advocating. So, for example, people think that there is a call here for shares that come with in-kind dividends, which is a really super interesting idea. But there's a level of regulatory complexity there, because if you are a gym, for example, and as part of your crowdfunding raise, you're issuing shares where the dividends will be paid in money-off coupons for your services, you're going to have to work out from the very beginning how to treat that on your books. If you're treating these things as dividends, you're going to have to issue 1099 divs. You're going to have to put a value on those services. And what happens if somebody disagrees with the value that you placed on them? They're going to get a tax bill for something that they didn't really value. So there's a whole bunch of issues that companies are going to have to consider much, much earlier in their lifespan. And accountants and lawyers are going to have to be able to deal with this. They are going to have to provide those services to companies on a really cost-effective way. They're going to, right from the very beginning, it is not going to be easy to do Title III crowdfunding for people who've never done any kind of disclosure before. So there's going to be a need for innovations in all of the service industries. And that, of course, is one of the things that CrowdCheck does. We walk the entrepreneurs through the entire disclosure process so that they know at the end of it that they have complied with the statute and the regulations. And those are the things that the service providers are going to have to address. But, of course, that's what they are doing. Folks are getting all very nervous about the fact that there are all of these weird things happening. There's a level of complexity. Now, innovation leads to complexity, and complexity leads to more innovation. So I think it's very important that the regulatory authorities just let the market develop. Yes, it is going to be very complicated to deal with 1,000 investors. But you know what? There are companies who have been formed to deal with that. So it's the service industry is responding.
Now, a lot of our listeners are still in that kind of category of normal people that haven't, jumped into the crowdfunding sector yet, but may be interested in doing that. And I know you're active on a number of the kind of industry associations in the US that have sprung up for the purposes of really, educating the market and advocating different positions on crowdfunding. Is that the place that people should start who are looking to get involved, as a broker dealer or as someone in the kind of startup community, for example, looking at crowdfunding?
Yeah, those are going to be very useful organizations, and there's quite a number of them being formed. There is the Crowdfunding Professional Association. There is the National Crowdfunding Association. Those are both trade groups, as it were. CFIRA, the Crowdfunding Intermediaries Regulatory Association. I hope I've gotten those initials right. CFIRA is probably the most prominent of all of these at the moment because we are in the regulatory and advocacy phase of this of development. But as the rules get adopted, of course, the other trade organizations will come into more prominence. And that's a fantastic way of getting involved. There are useful resources in all of these places, and people should take a look. There's a lot of people really trying to build a better investor here. One of the criticisms, of course, of crowdfunding is that we're talking about ordinary investors, people who have not done a great deal of investing in their lives before, and therefore the regulatory authorities worry about these people not having the level of sophistication. And of course, they might not now, but this is a fantastic way to get involved in investing. And through crowdfunding, what I hope is that we build a better investor. We build people who know what they should look for. They know what they value in a company. They know what the warning signs are of somebody not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And they become better, they demand more information. And so that we don't have things like the Bernie Madoff scandal. People in that, and those were more sophisticated investors, and they got it wrong. So if we can build a better investor who can challenge people feeding them information, get more and better information, then hopefully we teach people to look after themselves and make the markets better.
I completely agree. I think that's a really important part of this of what this industry is going to become. The amount of kind of data and insights and context about early stage businesses that we'll be able to generate from, these crowdfunding portals, kind of enforcing a level of transparency on the whole process for the first time. I think it's going to be very powerful information, and that should really help to educate, investors, but also, of course, entrepreneurs. Particularly first-time entrepreneurs looking at going into starting their own business for the first time and not really knowing where to start and what the important kind of factors are. And hopefully all of that will help them as well.
I think so. I think this improves the market.
Terrific stuff. Well, Sarah, that's been really interesting, and I really appreciate you joining us today. How can people get in touch with you and CrowdCheck?
We live on the web at www.crowdcheck.com, and we tweet at crowdcheck, and we have a Facebook page under the name of CrowdCheck. And we love to hear from people.
Fantastic. Well, I hope you will. Sarah Hanks, thanks very much, and we'll catch up again soon.
Great. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.